Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky's Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to be talking a little Chicago baseball. We're going to be talking White Sox, Cubs, and some NFL, maybe sprinkle some more in. And first, though, we'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The Blackhawks are on the verge of becoming very good, so you will see these young stars. So head on over to icehawks.com, get your hat, shirt, jersey, sign up for season tickets and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, we are another week in the books of the MLB season. How are you feeling, my friend?
Well, me personally, I'm feeling pretty good, and I've enjoyed this really nice weather, and I feel like we've at least had a little fun watching the Cubs, a little more than what we've had in weeks prior, so that's something, right?
That's something.
I mean, I'm at a point where I'm liking what we're seeing overall and enjoying it and feeling a little better about the long-term outlook. But in terms of getting back into this thing this year, I'm not there yet. I'm just not there yet. And I feel like there's going to be more and more attention to certain aspects of this team and this franchise. Because one thing that I think I can say is that outside of just, you know, what's on the major league field, I feel like we're seeing some good things in the minor league system too. So you're kind of just like, okay, we're going to see how this continues, because individual performances are going to be pretty important, I think, for a number of guys. And, you know, obviously you have Dansby and Ian and, you know, Saya and Nico locked in, but you want to see Christopher Morel continue to mash. You want to see how Marcus Stroman can continue to pitch. You want to see if Kyle Hendricks can continue to look more like himself, because these things are going to be important beyond this year, no matter what.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, you saw the turnaround, because last week we were just digging them a grave, and they really turned it around, because we talked about, like, hey, this is going to be a make or break week for them, because you've got you know, a stand against the team that was in first place in the division, and then a Baltimore team that is really, really good. I believe they're second in that, you know, absolutely stacked division.
Yeah, and they have some really exciting players, you know, Adley Rutschman obviously being one of them. And that was no easy task. That's for even being at home. That was not an easy series.
No. And they, you know, they manhandled Pittsburgh, but Baltimore, some of the scores were lopsided, but it felt a lot closer than those scores indicated. I mean, you know, they Friday's game, they took it away. They, I guess it was a close one Saturday, but it was a tough series, and it was nice to see the Cubs rise to the occasion rather than, you know, shrink and shrivel up.
Yeah. And, you know, I was at Friday's game. My dad and I were there. Also some friends of mine, one of our good listeners, John, was there as well. And I was able to hang out with him for a little bit. My dad and I had some really good seats in the lower level behind the Orioles dugout. And, you know, it was a 3-2 game in the middle innings, and Kyle Hendricks went five and he pitched okay. But in his last few innings, you could definitely tell the Orioles were starting to square him up a little bit. So I think they pulled Kyle at the right time. You know, he's like, okay, You gave us five solid innings. We're going to turn this over to the bullpen. Fulmer got out of some trouble, which was good. You know, there was like a leadoff double that was on a bloop to Patrick Wisdom, and he was able to get out of that. Next thing you know, the Cubs break it open. Ian Happ comes off the bench, drives in a few runs. Christopher Morel hits a rocket double off the wall. And then Saya and a few other guys added some insurance, and it ended up being a runaway game. But it was definitely close throughout. And then Saturday's game, obviously, you had the return of Justin Steele. That was a 3-2 game. That was a run-run game. That was really impressive stuff by the bullpen to shut that down.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see Justin Steele come back and pitch a really good game. The bullpen shut it down. That was a game I was very worried about because the bats were a little cold.
Yeah, they were. They were. And it's going to be one of those things where you're going to have to deal with some inconsistencies here because the bats were on fire those first four games, but you knew that wasn't going to last, right? I mean, there was going to be a time where the bats were going to have to slow down a bit.
Yeah. I mean, you can't expect to be averaging like 9 runs a game.
As fun as it was, yeah.
Yeah, so it's you've got to be able to eke out those one-run games, and that's really been the bane of the Cubs' existence. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but if you look at their record in one-run games, it's atrocious. It's not just bad, it's atrocious. Even if you got it to, like, on a scale of atrocious to amazing, somewhere between closer to meh, but on the atrocious side, you would probably be, you know, battling it out for first place right now.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you look at a lot of those one run losses and some you could blame on the bullpen, some you could blame on the lack of clutch hitting. And, you know, over that homestand, you got two things that you weren't getting consistently. Bullpen performing well and clutch hitting. You had a lot of clutch hitting outside the finale, which, you know, oh well, but you had a lot of clutch hitting in those first five games. And even, you know, you didn't score a lot, obviously, on Saturday, but when you had the go-ahead RBI opportunity at third, Talkman, who's been really good, by the way, puts it in play and drives in the run.
I want to rescind anything bad. I don't remember exactly if I said anything bad, but if I did say anything bad about Mike Talkman, I want to rescind it.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real godsend so far because this is one of those things where we've been saying to ourselves, you know, where are we going to find that random guy that other teams seem to find? And, you know, obviously the sample size isn't huge, but so far Talkman has been really, really good, really productive. He's not only gone out and hit, but he's made good plays in the field.
Yeah. And then you've got Bellinger back and they got him playing first, which is a good thing because you're getting, well, you've got a competent bat at first base and it allows him time to really still be in the lineup, but not have to worry about running balls down in center field.
Right. Exactly. I mean, that I think is the biggest win of all is, I mean, obviously Bellinger's defense is second to none when it comes to center field. Like he is really, really good, but you have to worry about his health too. You want to keep his knee healthy. And the fact that Mike Talkman is able to play center field and do it well is it makes this so much easier because it's not like you're putting out, you know, like a Rafael Ortega who was an okay hitter at times, but wasn't really much of a defender. You know, he didn't have that range. He didn't read the ball off as well as Bellinger. And you know what? Few people do. Few people are as good in center as Cody Bellinger is. And obviously, if I had to choose just based on ability between Talkman and Bellinger, obviously 10 times out of 10, I'm taking Bellinger. But the fact that Talkman is doing it as well as he is makes it easier.
Absolutely. And honestly, the way Christopher Morel is swinging the bat, you've got to find a permanent home for him.
And this has been a conversation that a lot of us have been having, including Jed Hoyer. You know, he's talked about it too, even recently, just in radio interviews, talking about finding that permanent home for him. So I think that you know, going into next year, I think there's going to be a lot of work finding that permanent home. And I believe that could be third base.
I mean, that makes sense. Isn't Wisdom this last year of his contract?
Well, I mean, last year of his contract or not, I do think we might be coming to the end of that regardless.
You know,
it's been rough.
My thoughts, I think for the last couple seasons, I've said, is Patrick Wisdom a guy you build around? No.
No.
But he's affordable. He's liked by the fans. And until you can find somebody to be better than him, he's a perfectly fine placeholder. And for the most part, he has been. And he started off this year as even more than a placeholder. And then the wheels just absolutely came off.
Yeah, and I mean, the play that he supposedly got hurt on Friday, which, you know, obviously I saw, where he slid and hurt his wrist, you know, how bad is it hurt? Is this more of a phantom IL? I think we could debate that. But, you know, either way, like his numbers have been abysmal at the plate. And he started off really well. He started off the season really, really well. It looked like he was changing his approach. He was hitting bombs and shortening up when he needed to, but the past month or so, it's just hasn't been there. And like other players like Wisdom, there comes that time, you know, basically to what you said, there comes that time where you're like, okay, you know, this type of player has a shelf life need. And I think we might be coming towards the end of that. And, you know, he's got a lot of power in that bat. But, you know, when you're striking out over 40% of the time and you're not hitting for power, because you can get away with the strikeouts if you were still hitting for power and producing, you just haven't seen any of that. And I feel like we've reached the end of that. I'll always be a fan of Patrick Wisdom, but when it's time, it's time. And right now it kind of feels like it's time.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. You know, going into the season, you know, we talked about did they do enough? And I was like, you know, I think you can squeeze another year out of him. So you're not trying to solve every hole. And honestly, I think it's working out the way it's intended to, is you didn't overpay for a free agent that you kind of stuck with. And you have the opportunity for Morel to come in and go down to the minors, come back up, and hit the baseball well and sort of naturally take over that spot. And I think it's worked out, or it's working itself out well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I'm not mad at it. And I definitely, you know, you're never going to hear me say anything bad about Patrick Wisdom. He's a likable guy. And mm-hmm. He came in here and exceeded, I mean, our expectations for him when he came was nil, and
right.
He's exceeded those expectations. He's been a net positive, not anything special, but he's been a net positive from expectations. And, you know, whatever his career holds after this, you know, I'm glad the time he spent here. So nothing bad at all.
No, nothing bad. And like, you know, as I've said before, the fact that you had a late bloomer like this maintain the value that he had for like more than a month or two is pretty remarkable. I mean, you had 30 plus homers in 21, 25 homers last year. And, you know, the first month this year, he was producing well. So the fact that you got two full productive years for a guy that could have easily just been a Brian LaHare or a Frank Schwindel, like a 2 month and then done type deal, you know, you give him a lot of credit for that. And obviously you're in a position different from being a contender when he's around. But the fact that you were able to get the production that you got, you take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the time when he was here was time that, you know, historically you look back at those rebuilding years and you're like, man, you look at a few years later and you're like, I totally forgot that guy existed. And that was the time kind of period that he's been playing for the Cubs, and he's he's done the thing that was asked of him and done it decently.
And he did it with grace. You know, he always had a good attitude. And, you know, obviously I don't want to sound like we're shipping him off now because he's not gone yet. But, you know, if this is indeed coming to an end, these are all the things we could say. And yeah, I got nothing bad to say.
Yeah, I'm just going to the same platform that we've had for the last several years is that once you're ready to compete, Patrick Wisdom can't be your starting third baseman.
Right. I mean, we've seen supposed placeholders, you know, come and go and not always do what you expected. Like you said, this was more of exceeding expectations. You know, the fact that you've gotten more out of him than some of the veterans you brought in over the past 2 years that were kind of on their last leg and, you know, just old and whatnot, you know, it's noteworthy, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, his time here was served well, and again, like, we're not shipping him out, but you see the winds changing.
And it's for the winds of change.
And for the Cubs, that's a good thing. It's a good thing. You know, once you move on to Christopher Morel, the better you are, because Christopher Morel is a better baseball player.
Well, and I think too that there comes a time where you can't have half your team be platoon guys. Like, obviously, we've always talked about how valuable platoon guys is, like a Ben Zobrist or whatnot, but you want a few of those guys. You can't have half your lineup being platoon guys, because not being able to settle into one position, then you have a bunch of average in a number of different places. You know, we have our guys up the middle in Swanson and Horner. We have our guys in left and right, but, you know, first and third are two of the premier positions in baseball. And those are something that you need a permanent solution to figure out.
Agreed. And, you know, a player like Ben Zobrist is really like a unicorn. You don't come across a guy like that who's can play multiple positions and is equally effective if you put him in as a starter versus if he's comes in as a sub. Those guys are few and far between. You know, that so you know, if you find one of those guys, you keep that guy.
Right, exactly. Because I mean, like you said, Ben Zobrist, you know, there's more to just being able to play multiple positions. It's playing multiple positions well and being as productive as Ben Zobrist was consistently throughout his entire career. That's like, I think the word unicorn, like you just said, I think that's a great way to put it.
And Christopher Morel has shown flashes of that. He's being able to play multiple positions, playing well when he's starting, playing well if he's coming off the bench. But you just want more from him. You think, I mean, you know, I don't want to compare. Ben Zobrist had a really good career. I don't want to compare or put those expectations on Morel, but, you know, Morel is a much better power hitter than Zobrist. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, this is a team that's desperate for more power in the lineup. And so I think it's a disservice to keep him as a super platoon guy, is find him a home. And I'm, you know, I'm not above kind of the Joe Maddon approach, where, you know, you move guys around, but keeping them consistently playing and having fairly consistent batting orders, I think is worthwhile.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that there's something to be said about getting consistent playing time to certain players. Obviously you have your everyday veterans, but Christopher Morel right now is a guy you want playing every day, regardless of production or not. I mean, there's more value in seeing what Pete can do over, you know, when we still had Eric Hosmer here, or when you have Miles Mastroboni in the lineup. You know, those are placeholders, guys filling out a roster. You know, this is something with Morel where it's more of a potential to be a long-term part of your team in some form. And, you know, right now is the time to see what that entails.
Yeah. And, you know, I have friends that are from all over the place that are fans of all types of teams. And the ones that are diehard baseball guys that aren't Cubs fans, they all hit me up and they were like, man, this Christopher Morel, I think he's good. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's neat to see, you know, Yankee fans and, you know, Philly fans and Red Sox fans all being like, yeah, we take notice of Christopher Morel and we like him.
Yeah. I mean, between the minors and the majors, he's hit a lot of home runs. And his home run, even though it was a losing effort, his home run in the finale against the Orioles, I mean, that was like, what, 110 miles an hour off the bat, something like that.
Yeah, it was a rocket.
The absolute rocket. And, you know, in the game I was at, he was like 3 for 5. He got robbed of being 4 for 5 at the wall. Like, he tomahawked one to left, but made a nice catch on the play. So he was hitting the ball hard. And I think the nice thing, too, is you see him putting the ball in play a bit more. You're seeing him go opposite field. Because, you know, one of the things with Morel, especially last year, was he was striking out a lot, which, mm-hmm. you know, isn't always unusual for a rookie batter, you know, especially with his type of approach, you know, a guy that's slugging, producing, has a lot of energy, you know, there's going to be a lot of K's that come with that.
Look at the history of Cubs players that have gone on to do good things. Is Rizzo had a lot of strikeouts coming up. Baez was striking out like 50 some percent of the time when he came up. Kyle Schwarber struck out a lot when he came up. And you know, it's natural.
Well, the Baez in 2014, you remember that.
Yep. I mean, it was, the 50-some percent strikeout rate.
It was ridiculously high.
It was bad.
Ridiculously high.
You just had, I mean, it was like end of career Sammy Sosa bad. Where you're like, hey, we got two strikes. This is a K. We're going to throw, you know, a high, you know, and high fastball. And he's just going to swing and miss because he can't get around on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I remember too, you know, we saw that power, but you saw a very different stance from Baez in that first year. And you're like, you know, to channel that power, he's obviously always going to strike out a lot, but how can we manage it? That's what we're trying to look for here in a way. I don't think that Morel's going to be as free of a swinger as Baez, but, you know, it's still something that's being actively worked on.
You know, my theory with the strikeouts is I can live with it if you're hitting home runs because you're producing. And I can also live with it if you balance out the lineup. Have your guys that can get on base, have your, you know, your contact hitters, line drive hitters, and then have your guys that strike out but have big home run power, balancing it out. So it's not just one type of guy, because you know you can mow that lineup down at points. And that's kind of what the Cubs had for a while, is just a lineup of the same type of hitters. And we're slowly starting to move away from that, kind of rapidly, but we moved away from that. To the opposite direction, where you know we don't have those big boppers, that the big home run, big strikeout numbers. So it's you know, coming back to that. So having guys that with big power, big, you know, that did do strikeout, balance out this roster is actually would be desirable at this point.
Yeah, and I think that just the challenge we have here is being with a team, watching a lineup that it's just, they're so hot and cold, because you get a lot of hot and cold from your key guys. When Ian Happ is in a slump, along with Nico and Dansby Swanson, you're not going to get anything. But when they start heating up, look what happened over the homestand. Nico was hitting, Dansby was hitting, Ian Happ was hitting. That's a big difference. You know, it's, you're not, you're not the 2016 Cubs where if Chris Bryant or Anthony Rizzo have like an 0-for-4 day, they're not going to do anything because you had everything top to bottom. That's not this kind of lineup right now.
I mean, during that era, we talked about though, like towards the end, we're like, man, like every game, the vast majority of your runs, not just one game, but every game that week, every game that month, the majority of your runs were off the home run. And we just kept talking about that's not sustainable. That's not sustainable. And now it's the polar opposite, where so few of your runs are on the home run. Got to find that balance.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, exactly. Because, especially when the way the game is shifted.
Yeah. And you were talking about like, you know, if Dansby's not hitting, if Nico's not hitting, if Hap's not hitting, they don't do anything. And you don't in this lineup have that one swing power to change that result. You know, the White Sox have a lot of struggles and problems going on, but you know, they've got the power where they can just turn things around with this one swing of the bat with multiple guys in that lineup.
Well, yeah, I mean, hey, it was kind of the outlier at the game I was at on Friday, because you had an inning with three home runs. You saw Amaya, Dansby, and Morel hit them. But if you look at what they did against the Pirates, it was to that point. They were playing a lot of small ball in that series.
Absolutely. It was just, you know, timely hitting with guys in scoring position. And, you know, it was those long innings. It wasn't the one swing of the bat type situations.
Right. Now, as we're talking, I got the Cubs game in the background. The Pirates pitcher just struck out the side, and Nico Hoerner had a pitch at his face that he swung at, and Sei Suzuki swung at a breaking ball that bounced in front of home plate. I think I just witnessed the worst offensive inning by the Chicago Cubs ever.
And those happen sometimes.
Yeah.
So with the Cubs, we are starting to see some things turn around a little bit, but there's still a lot of concerns I have about this team.
And me too.
I keep harping at the lack of power, and adding Morel does add some semblance of power to your roster, but you need more power. I'm still really concerned about Jameson Taillon.
Yeah.
Like, man, that guy, sometimes you're like, okay, maybe he's starting to figure it out, and then just, you know, falls flat on his face.
It's just, I said this on Twitter, it's a grind every time he's out there. He finally got a quality start against the Pirates, helped them win, which is cool, but it wasn't pretty. It was a lot of base runners, and I think the biggest problem with Taillon right now that he struggled with all year, he can get ahead of hitters. He cannot put them away. That's been such a struggle. And I don't know if he's not trusting his stuff. I don't know if something's not, you know, in just not feeling right. I don't know. But even in the games where he pitches meh or okay, It's not clean. Because, like, if you look at the last game he pitched, which was Sunday, you look at the final line, just based on runs given up, 5 1/3, 4 runs. It's not good, but it's not awful.
That's been, like, his consistent line, is every time you look at his line, you're like, oh, gave up four runs. And it's, you know, I'm going to chalk part of it up to, you move to a new team, you sign a big contract. We've seen it endless numbers of times. It's, you get this like anxiety, like you have to do something big to justify to the new fans and your new team that you are worth it. And it kind of backfires. You know, Yu Darvish, when we first brought him to the Cubs, man, this was terrible. And turned out he was lights out. You know, we saw, I mean, he never really recovered. Maybe a little bit, but Jason Hayward, he was that first year with the Cubs was just abysmal. And so I'm hoping we can chalk some of it up to that. And, you know, the remaining 3 years of that contract will be like, look back and be like, remember when Tyon sucked and, you know, becomes like a bar trivia type thing.
Yeah, I hope so too. I really hope so too. And I mean, there is one kind of key difference here between him and some others is we signed Tyon to be a 3 or 4, a solid 3 or 4. Obviously, when we signed Yu Darvish and John Lester, and you know, those were supposed to be your aces, your number one guys. You know, this is signing a middle of the rotation guy who kind of our expectations are like, a 380 ERA FIP 1.2 whip type pitcher. But you know, obviously his ERA right now is what, 6.71. You know, we just haven't seen what we've been looking for. And you just watch him. Like, you can look at the box scores and be like, okay, it's mediocre. But if you sit down and watch, it just seems off. Something seems off. The execution, even some of the body language, like it doesn't seem right. And I hope that's something the Cubs can easily tweak and fix, because he's an important part of this rotation. Even if he's not going to be your ace, you need him to be good. You need him to, you know, obviously go out there and give you solid outings every time. And even like, you know, even in some of these last few games where like the line doesn't look awful, you know, he gave up 8 hits in 5 1/3 on Sunday and his defense helped him out a bit. So a lot of traffic out there. And it's hard when you're always trying to work your way out of a mess.
You know,
it seems like he goes out there and tries to survive.
Yeah. Completely different stuff, but the same sort of mentality and energy of the end year or two of John Lester, when he was just, you know, grinding and willing guys out. It's a labored. It's not like it's the opposite of Stroman, where Stroman goes out there and makes it almost look easy, even when he's you know, guys are getting hits on him. He goes out there. Everything just looks very smooth and natural.
Yeah. Like his pace looks good.
But Tyon is going to be more important depending on what happens with Stroman too.
Sure.
You know, if the Cubs keep Stroman and sign him to an extension, you know, the numbers and whatever Tyon comes out and does is going to be less important. But if they move on from Stroman at the trade deadline or even dumber and keep him for the whole year, but without an extension, he's going to be more important because odds are this is the last year of Kyle Hendricks, and you know, he's going to be the veteran in your rotation.
Right.
You know, I know we've discussed it before and not much has probably changed, but I don't like the way the Stroman situation is headed.
I'm going to let it play out.
I'm
just going to let it play out.
I mean, you know, completely disagree with me if you don't, you know, think I'm correct, but if you don't trade him at the deadline and you do not extend him during the season, that's kind of dumb, right?
Yeah, it's like you need to do one or the other.
Yeah, because you can't lose him for nothing. And so it's either, and I don't think you're in a place where you're like, you know what? Like, it'd be a different story if they were in first place and they were like, we're going to go for it this year and then let him walk. And, you know, that might be a different situation, but they're not in a place to compete just yet. And they either have to trade him to get value or sign him to an extension and keep him around.
Yeah, I mean, it's you're in that weird spot right now where, you know, you don't necessarily want to sell, but, you know, what is your outlook for the rest of the season and beyond? And, you know, are you looking at your farm system and looking at some of these arms and relying on them to be the replacements that you need? If you don't bring Stroman back.
Yeah, I understand that you feel good about the young arms you have, but I mean, in reality, if you don't extend Stroman, you're probably going out and having to replace at least two arms, because last year of Hendricks deal and whatever you do with Stroman. And those are some pretty big shoes to fill.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another question you ask a Stroman too is, how long is he going to keep this up? He's been a pretty consistently good pitcher throughout his career, and he's not old, but he's not young either.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a way to work out a fair deal.
I'm sure there is. If he really wants to be here, I'm sure there is.
But, you know, and also you have to consider is how long are you going to be able to count on Smiley throwing the numbers he's throwing?
Not long. He's laboring tonight. I mean, just watching tonight, I think Smiley in the long run, if you keep him around longer, is probably your fifth starter type guy.
Yeah. And so if you were looking at that, so, you know, hypothetically say you've decided you don't feel comfortable giving a 4-year deal to Stroman. And Hendricks, you let him go. So your rotation the next year is going to be Steele 1, Tyone 2.
It can't be.
And I mean, look at the market for pitchers. Like,
this is where the home grow becomes big.
It's just, I'm not saying that they can't fill the shoes with the players in the minor leagues. I'm just saying you've got to work that in. You can't just go out there and be like, all right, here we go. Four young starters, have at it. That's a tough ask.
It is tough. And you might have to make a deal, like a trade.
But I mean, or you can just pay Stroman and
that's,
you know,
it. Well, yes.
You know what? Throw a 4-year deal out. I mean, is worst case scenario is you get 2 good years and 2 bad years.
Right.
But, you know, in the long run, Hayden Wisniewski, I think, is going to be okay.
I hope. I'm not giving up on him.
No, I'm not giving up. I think, you know, the good stuff, I think you just need some tweaks in there. But, you know, I don't feel comfortable enough with what they have in the arms and the minors to be like, you know what, next year we're good. We're good with Steele and Tyone and whatever we get from Smiley and then 2 new starters. Like, that's a big ask.
It is a big ask.
And then assuming that you're like, well, is Smiley going to even stay healthy? You know, that's the concern I have is, you know, it's one thing if he stays healthy and you're like, even if you don't get great numbers from him, but his health as well. And I mean, he's starting off shaky tonight, and He didn't have a good start against Pittsburgh in his last start. He got bailed out by, he was due to get bailed out because he's bailed out the offense so many times this season. But so it was good for, turnabout. But, he didn't pitch well against Pittsburgh.
It was meh.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the wheels fell off. I'm not saying he went out there and got Lance Lind, but, it was not a good start. So that's my concern with the whole Stroman thing. And it's you're running out of real estate. You got 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and you better have the framework of a deal or have big expectations. And honestly, you'd better get a major haul for him because the free agent market is pretty shitty for starting pitchers.
Yeah, there's a few on there, but it's not very deep. And, it's certainly a far cry from a Lester Scherzer market because you have Shohei Ohtani's clearly your number one guy, and that's going to cost you $500 million. And then, you have some other decent options out there, but it's not where I'd be going to look for an ace.
Right. Is there a possibility that they sign Hendricks back to a short extension?
Maybe, depending on how this year goes.
Him, I'm willing to let play out. Stroman,
to let him play out.
Yeah, he's the opposite. You let him play out, and because you feel confident that if you want him back, the mutual interest is there. Stroman, if you let that play out that whole year, he's already champing at the bit about a new contract. And if you let that play out the whole season, I think he's just going to be like, nah, I'm going. And then you have to bid against everybody else. I think your best bet with him is either if you've made the decision, you're not going with him, you got to trade him. And if you feel that you want him back, your best bet is to sign him an extension before the season starts.
Yeah, sure.
And, maybe part of it is that it makes next year's guaranteed on this same contract and then adds years onto it. I don't know. You can get creative with it, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but coming up, we're starting another series against Pittsburgh, and then go to London to play St. Louis.
Yeah, yes, and that's going to be a challenge. You go halfway across the world, you're not used to that kind of travel, so we'll see how they're able to hold up.
I just hope they can kick the shit out of St. Louis. Last time we went to play St. Louis, St. Louis was playing like dog doo-doo, and they turned it around against the Cubs and then went on a hot streak.
Yep.
And I was like, do not give them that ammunition. Beat them down. Let them know that they're one of the worst teams in baseball.
The scary thing is, though, they've now won 3 straight after looking absolutely abysmal. So it's like, oh, you're going to get hot just in time to play the Cubs. Go figure.
Wilson Contreras is going to go, 7 of 8 in this series with 3 home runs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Should we talk a little White Sox?
Yeah.
The White Sox, again, is I don't know how to, articulate this any more clearly. This is a division that is dog poop sandwiches. And
that's putting it lightly.
The only reason that the White Sox are even hanging around is because of how bad this division is, and they still can't really gain much ground. And this week they had 2 series, and granted they were not easy series. You had the Dodgers and Seattle, and again, I recognize Seattle's record, but Seattle's Seattle is a better team than their record currently is.
It was a challenging trip.
And you lose both series.
And you lost some of those games that was really tough. Really tough losses.
Yeah. I mean, the 5-4 loss to the Dodgers. Tough one to swallow. You know, you had a absolutely great start by Kopech in the first game against Seattle, and you lose that one.
Lance Lynn striking out 16 hitters.
And you lose 5-1.
That's a real shame.
It's tough. And then plus Clevinger's hurt.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the thing about the White Sox is you're seeing some really good individual things. Like you see Jake Berger just, it feels like he's hitting a home run every day. You know, you saw Luis Robert hit a big home run against the Dodgers. You saw Eloy Jimenez come back and drive in, I think it was the go-ahead and game-winning run in their one win against the Dodgers. And, you know, you've seen some pretty good starting pitching overall. Lucas Giolito's been pretty good. You look at what Lance Lynn did the other day. You talked about Michael Kopech. I mean, before Clevinger got hurt, you know, we don't like the guy, but he was pitching pretty well, and he has been pitching pretty well recently. But, you know, you get these individual things that are working well for you, and then something goes wrong in some of these games. And, you know, the one game they were up 4-0, you get back-to-back home runs twice. It was, you know, another game which Berger and Robert homered, and you're loving that. You finally see Andrew Benintendi homer.
Yeah, first home run of the season.
Yeah, and that was a go-ahead blast too. And then, you know, just then something goes wrong, and, you know, you've lost these tough games. And the funny thing is, the two games they won were really, I mean, they were come from behind late big wins. You were down to your final two outs in the second game of Seattle, and that guy that came up from the White Sox, I never even heard of him. He was in their franchise forever. You know, he gets the game-tying hit and the game-winning hit. That's a really good win. And then the game against the Dodgers, they're down 4-2 in the eighth. Berger ties it. They get the lead. They win that game. That's a really good win. You need to stack more of those wins together. This division sucks. It's still there for the taking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that first game against the Dodgers of that series, all right, that was a clunker. But the rubber match of that series, you should have won that one.
Yeah.
You should have won game one against Seattle. And your bats just went absolutely cold in the finale of that Seattle series. But, you know, Lance Lynn, like you said, struck out 16 guys and you lose 5-1. You're like, how does that happen? This team is just an anomaly. And, you know, Jake Berger is absolutely crushing baseballs. And
even, so why is he batting seventh?
Yeah. Tim Anderson is a shell of himself.
There's something wrong there. I think there's a lot going on.
Not just physically, there's something mentally wrong too.
Yeah. And you know, you'd probably heard him open up a bit about what's been going on.
Yes. And you know that, I mean, you assume, and based on observation, that is having taking a toll on his ability to play baseball, because he just doesn't look like he's focused on the game mentally, and he doesn't look right physically.
And this is a guy who has always put his 100% effort on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Always. We never questioned his work ethic. We never have. And I mean, you know, with Tim Anderson is, you know, you're not obviously not getting power from him, which, you know, okay, power isn't necessarily his big game, but you did see him hit for some power, you know, in his prime and early on in his career. You know, right now you haven't gotten it yet. And, you know, obviously you've seen some miscues in the field. So, you know, Tim Anderson is one of your most important players, and if they're going to have a chance to, you know, really try to make some noise and take advantage, you know, he's one that you obviously want to see get right. You just, with everything that's going on, you know, it's a lot more complicated than, you know, we can just say, obviously.
Yeah. And, you know, he picked a really bad time for this to happen where the White Sox need him. And I believe this is his last year of the contract.
He's got an option next year. So it's up to the White
team.
It's a team, I believe.
Okay. So, you know, it makes it real tough, you know, because this actually opens up where you're, if the White Sox, you're like, do we want to pay this guy?
Well, I mean, I think that they're going to pick up, if they don't trade him, they're definitely going to pick up that option. I don't think you're just going to let your franchise face walk even after a year that wasn't as good as you thought it would be. And you know, he could still turn it around, but
how much is he making? 16?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I feel like just letting him walk would be pretty dumb.
I mean, the White Sox have done dumber things for $16 million.
Well,
So I'm saying is if things don't turn around this season, I don't be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that he will or will not be a White Sox next year. I just don't think it's going to be because they just don't pick up an option, if that makes sense.
No, I hear what you're saying. I always try to, and for most teams, that's the sensical thing to do.
Right.
I've just seen this White Sox organization is run based on financials, and wouldn't be shocked. I would not be shocked if the White Sox did that. That's all I'm saying. Is it the right move? I would agree with you that you would pick up the option.
Right.
But I have to put on my Jerry Reinsdorf glasses and look through those lenses and see what he's
everything
thinking.
Everything has Tony La Russa's face on it. Literally everything. Just your wall, like your clock is a Tony La Russa face, and his nose like has like the dials on them.
Your crock pot just becomes,
I was just gonna say,
from Have That to Tony La Russa.
It goes from ha to
God.
That's so funny. I was just gonna say, that's so great.
You put alcohol in it and it goes glug, glug, glug.
Glug, glug, glug. But, you know, and I think just going back to Tim Anderson, too, I mean, you know, he's had some injury issues as well. So you wonder physically how he's feeling, right? Like, yeah, that's a big honestly, factor, too.
Yeah, I honestly think it's a combination of physical and mental. Is he's had a long injury history, and, you know, he's had injuries this season. And then all the other stuff that he's going, that's, you know, self-induced or not, the things that are going on that are impacting the mental aspect of the game, all of those factor in and they're creating the storm that he is currently in.
Right. And I think that with Tim Anderson too, is that it really is one of those things where you look at it and say, the last thing we need is for Tim Anderson to be struggling, because I mean, he's that when the White Sox are good, it's because not solely because, but one of the main reasons is because of him. He has been the engine that drives that van. And if he, you know, plays well again, then you're going to win more games. I mean, he's just that important to the team. And it's tough.
Tim Anderson is a player that plays his best when he is playing cocky and confident. And he is not that guy right now. I think that's just taking a toll. Is he's got to find that swagger, you know, that bat flip Tim Anderson is the best version of Tim Anderson.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, not only does it fire himself up, but it fires up all of his teammates. And we've seen them feed off that energy. You know, when he was in his prime years from 2019 through 2021, his prime years, those were the best years of the White Sox. Obviously, 2019, they were building up, but they were building up big. 2020, 2021, you made the playoffs, and, you know, that's when you were contending. And, you know, then last year, he was hurt for what, the last few months?
Mm-hmm.
And it was harder for them to get over it, and they didn't. So right. You need that version of Tim Anderson back if you want to get back and, you know, start winning. And, you know, obviously you're going to keep having the opportunity because that division is such a pile of dog crap. That opportunity is going to be there for you. So, you know, look, I mean, they went 2-4 on that last road trip. They could have easily lost many more games than they did, but they didn't because that division's so bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And they got a tough road ahead of them this week. You've got three against Texas and then three against Boston. And I know Boston's record's not great, but any team that's playing in that division is, you know, there was it iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
Every game is tough.
Yep.
And so this is a tough week for the White Sox to try to gain ground.
Yeah, you have to be in a good position to make decisions by the trade deadline, because eventually you're going to have to make those decisions.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, we've already heard that Lucas Giolito is going to be gone. Whether it be at the trade deadline or at the end of the season, he's not going to be back.
Right.
And I think where they are in the standing probably dictates that. If they've made a decision that he's not back and they're just treading water and not competing, you know, they're obviously not going to win a wild card, but if
it's division or nothing.
Yeah. It's division or nothing. If you're just treading water or you're losing ground at the trade deadline and you've already made your decision that Giolito is not going to be part of your future, why in the world wouldn't you trade him? Try to get something for him.
Right. I mean, that's a situation where you're going to have to make a tough call, because if you do believe you're in a position to go to the playoffs, it feels like to me they would try to do that, because they want to try to win with this regime while they can. But, you know, there's going to be a threshold where you got to say, look at your chances. Where are they? And then you're going to have to make a decision, because having Lucas Giolito, the longtime centerpiece of your rotation, walk for nothing, you can't do that. You can't.
I mean, it's really analogous to what the Cubs are going through with Stroman. I mean, less vocal, but, you know, it's a decision of like, hey, there's a decision that has to be made about this guy. And, you know, you would like to have them through the whole season to try to compete for your division, but, you know, at the same time, you just sort of want to get what you can for them at the trade deadline.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be one of those things where I don't think we're getting a solidified answer, because, I mean, we'll see. It's, you know, can the White Sox get hot and take over this bad division? You can't rule it out.
Yeah. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, it really does not take that much to go on this hot streak and overtake this division. Cause you look there, like, it's not even like the Twins are going like hot streak, then cold streak. It is just straight mediocre. You know, 4-6 in their last 10 or 6-4 in their last 10. They're just treading 5-5 in their last 10. They're just treading water.
It's kind of the same thing with the Guardians too.
Yeah. If you just string like, you know, 7 wins together, you are just going to absolutely gain ground, you know, gain 3-4 games right there.
What was it, 2 weeks ago? They gained like 4 games in 5 days.
Yeah. So it doesn't take much, but it also doesn't take much for the wheels to fall off and you just fall back behind.
Yeah, I mean, right now you're just in that no man's land between land right now.
And I'm not saying these, you know, games this week are unwinnable, but Texas is pretty darn good. And, you know, and you're going to have to take care of business against Boston. You got to go out there and actually do it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's not impossible to win these games. It's challenging, but you can do it. I mean, you know, I don't want to pull this, but look at that last series. You went 2-4. Wins and losses are all that matters. Mm-hmm. But you didn't get blown out. And I'm not saying that, oh, well, if this would have happened, that would happen, blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm not trying to be Dave Wannstedt here, but what I'm saying is that they've played some competitive baseball where a few baseball things break your way and then suddenly things look very different. You know, it's if they were getting just absolutely shit wrecked every night, then I think the mood around the team would be much, much worse than it is. And kind of like a, hey, you know, this clearly is not, but you know, the White Sox, that's the most frustrating thing is they've been in all these games. It's just, you know, they're losing in some of these margins.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the White Sox, I don't even know who's starting tonight. Are they going opener or?
It was Tanner Banks, I believe.
Okay. But in this series, you against Texas, you should have Cease and Kopech going, which gives you the opportunity to have the at least a chance to win that series, which would be huge.
Well, and you know, the other thing too is, you know, eventually you're going to be playing your division again. So what position are you going to be in when those games come?
Right.
You know, you're going to play the Royals again. You're going to play the Tigers again. You're going to play the Twins again. You're going to play the Guardians again. And, you know, the thing is the White Sox have fared pretty well against the Guardians and the Twins. I think the Twins, they're like 500 against, and you're 4-2 against the Guardians. You know, obviously last year, one of the big problems was they couldn't beat those guys, where this year you fared decently well. But, you know, obviously you want to be in a more optimal position to where those games mean more, because then you're closer and then winning those games gets you right there. You know, it's that's going to be the thing is getting to that point.
Right. Where is this? Yes, Cease goes tomorrow against the Rangers. And why is MLB going so loading so slow? And yeah, Kopech goes to game three of that series. So you really have an opportunity to win this series.
You do.
You've got your two best pitchers going. You know, you're probably seeding today's game with Tanner Banks. And I think it's the fourth inning. They've already got somebody else in. But yeah, you've got your two best pitchers going in. And, you know, in theory, you should be able to compete there. And then if you can take that series against Texas, then, you know, you've got to feel good about going to Boston.
Right, exactly. If you can win this series, then exactly, you feel a lot better about going to Boston.
You know, but if you lose the series or get swept this series, that makes it a whole lot tougher playing Boston.
Right, exactly. It's about putting yourself in the best position.
Right. And let's see. I'm just looking at the current standings. Oof. Detroit passed you up in the standings, so you're 5.5 if you're the White Sox. But like
is anybody above 500 or are the Twins at 500?
Twins are at 500. But remember, I was saying that nobody in your division, you know, it's no highs and lows. It's just mediocre. Minnesota, their last 10, 5-5. Cleveland, 5-5. Detroit, 5-5. It's, you don't need to go on these like huge winning streaks.
You just
need to play above 500 baseball and you're going to catch them.
Yeah. You have the ultimate gift. Take advantage.
Yeah.
And right now you're in a window where you need to take advantage. You know, you're not like a team that's like, if this was 2018, 2019 and you're building up, the pressure really isn't there. But, you know, now you're in your competitive window, you're in your contending window, and you got to play like you're going for it in a situation like this. Let me rephrase that. That's how they're thinking. What fans and other people think, who they are, is different. But from their perspective, they have to think that way, whether we like it or not. That's not necessarily how I think. That might not be necessarily how you think. I do think that you have to evaluate where you are realistically, but that's not going to be the way that the organization thinks.
I'm just looking. I feel bad for Baltimore. They're 5 games out of first, but they would be pretty much in first place in every other division in baseball.
Yeah, that's a tough draw.
Yeah, the White Sox just gotta, I'm not even saying like drastically change their, just eke out some wins in those tight games. And, you know, they should be able to climb out of this hole pretty darn quick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, this is not an insane division to, you know, to climb out. And like, I mean, if they were in the East, they're like 20 games out of first place.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it's really the same thing. It's a similar thing with the Cubs too.
Yeah. I mean, the Cubs are in a very winnable division.
If the Cubs were in the NL East, we'd be done.
Yeah. Milwaukee found a way to go back into first place. And they're 3 games above 500.
Yeah.
And they're four and six in their last 10, and they moved into first place.
Yep. Yep.
Tell
you though, the Reds are a little frightening.
The Reds are just, they're on fire right now. And Joey Votto just came back.
And he hit a home run. And listen,
I'm gonna say this. If the Cubs can't win this division, I'd rather it be Cincinnati than any other team.
Sure. Sure. This isn't me hating on Cincinnati. It's just, you know, they're in our division. We're going to have to deal with them no matter what. And listen, I do think there is going to be a time when they cool off a bit.
Oh, absolutely.
Their trajectory for the future is looking really good. You got a lot of young talent, a lot of excitement there, but they're not currently built like the Dodgers or the Braves.
No, very few teams are.
Very few teams are, exactly. And, you know, they don't have pressure. They're just building up, and this is all just a way for them to build up. And, I mean, it's kind of similar with the Cubs, too, where you didn't come in thinking you were going to be a legit contender this year, but, you know, with the Reds, this is really something where the pressure's off and they're able to build this young, exciting team. And it's looking really good for the future. I mean, it's with me with the Cubs is it's not how many games we're back, but it's 3 teams you have to get over.
Right. And I mean, it's not like they're powerhouse teams, but still it's psychologically just leapfrogging those teams, because, you know, you might gain on, let's say you win, Pirates lose, and you gain a game, but if Cincinnati and Pittsburgh both win, you didn't gain anything on them. It's psychologically it's tough, you've got to, when you leapfrog that many teams, you've kind of got to go on a winning streak, because you've got to overcome, you know, that account for them winning games and multiple teams winning games.
It's right. Not just exactly.
One team sort of having a rough week.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, you know, you can look back at when we were 5.5 back at the All-Star break in 2017. Well, we were 5.5 back of the Milwaukee Brewers, and that was one team. That was one team. This is three.
Yeah, and it's not impossible by any stretch. I mean,
No. I'm just saying it's a little more challenging.
You know, Milwaukee's 3 over .500, Cincinnati's 2 over .500, and Pittsburgh's 2 under .500. Like, it's completely doable. It's just, it's a lot tougher to leapfrog multiple teams than just setting your sights on one team. And, you know, I'm not by any stretch burying St. Louis. And I know that they've won 3 in a row, but that team is 13 games under .500, 73 games into the season.
They have a long hill to climb. They can, yeah. If there's any team in the NL that could climb it, it's them, but that's a pretty steep hill.
Yeah, that is a big, big steep hill to climb. I mean, that's given a lot of teams head start, even in not good division. Just, I mean, even winning, you know, 2 out of 3, winning every series 2 out of 3, that takes you a while to dig out of that hole.
It is. And I mean, you know, that's the most surprising thing about this whole team, this whole thing. You would think that it wouldn't be the Cardinals that are that team, that it could be literally anybody else. That's the last team you would suspect to be in this position, this division, but here they are. We're like, if you look at the AL Central, the Royals being last, does that really surprise anybody? No. The Royals are an absolute tire fire. I believe they passed the A's for worst record in baseball.
No, they did. It
went back. Yeah. It went back. Yeah. Right. But the fact that there was a point past opening day where there was a team worse than the A's says a lot, right?
Yeah. Literally, there's the Cardinals are the only team that's in last place in their division that was not expected. You know, AL East, you probably picked Boston to be last.
And not because they're bad. They're just the least talented of all those teams right now.
Yes. It's just, that is just an arms race. Yeah. We all picked Kansas City to be worst. We all picked Oakland to be worst. We all picked Washington to be worst. And I think we all picked Colorado to be worst.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I think we probably would have assumed Pittsburgh would be the worst in this division, and they're holding their own.
They are. And, you know, they got some promise too. And, you know, just wait until O'Neill Cruz is going to be back way late in the season. And who knows where they'll be at that point, but at least well, they can finish strong.
They just brought up a new player from.
Yeah. Their number one prospect. Yep.
Yeah. You know, what's wild. St. Louis has the second best run differential in the division at minus 13.
Yeah. They've blown a lot of games.
The Cubs are the only team in their division with a plus run differential.
It's frustrating.
I mean, Pittsburgh was winning this division and they are a minus 24 run differential. Cincinnati's minus 19. And Milwaukee's in first place and they've not even scored 300 runs this season.
Yeah, that's the NL Central for you. A lot of warts.
And Cincinnati is just scoring runs. They just can't stop anymore. They just give up so many runs. They're destroying everybody in this division as far as runs scored. They just can't stop runs from being scored.
You know, they remind me a lot of the Detroit Lions. What they did last year.
Yeah. Score, score, score. Can't stop anybody on defense.
Score, score, score.
All right, should we talk a little Bears quick?
Sure.
This is the time of the year where you just hear garbage, and I don't listen to anything. And the current thing that I'm trying not to hear because it's frustrating and I don't believe it for a second is the report that the Bears are frustrated with Chase Claypool and are not happy with him.
And kind of smelled the BS right away.
Yeah. I mean, it's the coming from the Waddle and Sylvie show makes me believe it a little bit more. But if you remember last year, there was the cap report where the Bears are done with Tevin Jenkins and
yeah,
they don't like his
yeah.
work ethic and he's not talented and he's immature and he's not going to make the squad. And he was their best offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And,
like,
and
I
you
just
know,
don't
maybe
believe things.
Right. And maybe there's a little something there, but it could just be being blown out of proportion a little bit.
You know, somebody might've floated to him to light a fire.
Sure. But
I never once believed it. I was like, he's a talented player on a rookie contract. Why in the world, if nothing else, he's a backup. You know, he's a low cost player. You're not going to find somebody, you know, that much less expensive than him with that upside. And Claypool is literally nothing. I mean, when you ask Brian Poles, he says, you know, every single time he's going to make that trade if he was in the same position he was in last year. Mm-hmm. You know, he said the calculus change if he knew it was going to be the first pick in the second round, but where they were at, he's like, yeah, every time I'm making that same decision, and I'm excited to see what Claypool is going to do. And we heard, you know, good things about it before they kind of shut him down just to, because he had some soft tissue injuries, or, you know, they don't want that to be carry on in a training camp. But before those injuries, we heard good things, and you asked Justin Fields and he's singing his praises. Like, I don't know how Eberflus publicly said good things about him. So, like, who is saying this? If it Eberflus, Poles, and Fields, the three most important people for evaluating Chase Claypool, are saying publicly really good things, who is it that's saying the bad things?
Right. Yes, questions right away.
I mean, you know, Ryan Pace could have been, you know, said something publicly and then said something else privately. Ryan Poles is not like that. He's very clear with his opinion about people.
Yes, he is.
You know, you even with Roquan Smith, we could feel the frustration, and, you know, I don't know if we all knew he was going to get traded, but we could feel we could sense the frustration, and
right.
You know, he talked, you know, that he's a good player and they want to get a deal done, but like, you sense the frustration and that he addressed the contract stalemate and that this is what we're trying to do. And, you know, it wasn't out of left field. You've never heard a single bad thing or any sort of frustrating thing or negative thing about Chase Claypool from Ryan Poles. So I'm absolutely shocked if that's the case.
Same here. I really don't read much into it right now.
And then you've got Jordan Love. Like, what? Did you hear? Did you see the?
Yeah, I saw it. Wasn't there some kind of context behind it? I don't know. I don't really pay attention to that stuff.
I'm not reading into it or anything. It's the backstory that's being said now is a fan asked him to make a video and saying that, and he did. It's all just weird.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is.
Like I get what they're trying to say is like, you know, like Aaron Rodgers owned the Bears. He's their daddy. And it totally came out the exact opposite. It sounded awkward. And it's, if nothing else, the start of the Jordan Love era is already off to an awkward start.
Yeah, it was very strange, very weird. And I mean, you know, obviously players like to get into some of the trash talk, which is fine. We saw it happen the other week. And, but yeah, it was very weird. And I'm just kind of like, huh, all right. All right.
Yeah. I saw it and I was like, that's weird. That's weird for Wisconsin even.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, right now we're wrapping up mini camp and we have training camp in about a month. And so far I'm pretty okay with where the Bears are. I would still like them to get another pass rusher.
Me too.
But I don't know where that pass rusher is coming from. Because
might have to be a trade.
I think so, because it's very clear that they're not on the same page with Yannick Ngakoue, and he seems to want. I'm hearing is $8 to $10 million a year, multi-year deal. And if you look what Leonard Floyd got, and you look what Frank Clark got, I think they got one got 5.5 and one got 7 for 1 year deals. So I don't know if Yannick is going to get his $8 to $10 million a year for a multi-year deal. So maybe the Bears do have an interest and they're letting him, you know, come to the realization that his market is not that. Maybe there's a trade brewing. Maybe they're waiting to see who gets kind of cut and bring somebody in. Because there's going to be players that could still play, they're going to get moved on from.
Sure. Absolutely. And I do think, I mean, you know, I might question the process a little bit, but I think they're going to do their due diligence here.
Yeah. And honestly, Eberflus historically has had good defenses that didn't get a ton of pressure. You know, it's if you can push the pocket, and that's essentially, you know, very similar to getting a pass rusher on the edge. And I'm starting to feel more and more comfortable with the defensive tackle situation. Is from what I'm hearing, Jervon Dexter is just manhandling people.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. If he can be a beast, that would be huge, because it's, you know, look at teams that are able to get pass rush up the middle. It makes everything so hard, because honestly, look at it is, you know, when you have pass rush around the edge, you can step up in the pocket. You can roll coverage away from them. When you're getting pass rush in the middle, is you can't step up in the pocket. It blows up plays and you have to roll everything out. It's if you try double teaming guys, you're really susceptible to this, to middle blitz. And that's always the closest path is right through the gut. And the Bears have fast linebackers. You send one of those linebackers, if you're seeing consistent double teams on your tackle, it leaves single blocking on your edge rushers. And it forces all your quarterbacks to roll out a little bit. So I can live with that if they can get that pass rush through the center. But, you know, again, this is all through practice and nothing in in a preseason game or a regular season game at this
point. Exactly. It's where you have to evaluate, you know, what's realistic here and what's, you know, you can take away some things from these types of practices, but it's not all the be all end all.
Right. And you know, the Bears offensive line seems like we've got the line, and now it's guys trying to gel, and which is good. Keeping guys healthy and having consistency is always a good thing. And Justin Fields getting really comfortable with DJ Moore, which is good.
That's great news. I think that's probably the best thing to come out of camp is, you know, obviously he's going to be your number one wide receiver. And the fact that they're gelling this early, I think that's big.
My only concern is I don't want him to rely on DJ Moore. I want him to try to spread the ball out because,
of course,
if you start relying on a guy, you know, good defensive coordinator will try to take him away. You know, have somebody over the top, somebody underneath, and really force him to thread the needle. I really want him to start getting a good rapport with Darnell Mooney and Chase Claypool, and you know, get reacquainted with Cole Kmet and get a rapport with Robert Tonyan, and really be able to utilize these offensive weapons.
Yeah. No, I agree.
That's my, you know, and hopefully we see that come training camp.
It's nice really that he already has a rapport with Mooney. So you have that rapport with Mooney, you're building it with DJ Moore. And then, you know, hopefully you can get a good rapport with Chase Claypool. There is that. So, you know, am I overly concerned about it? No, but it's definitely worth talking about.
You know, but it's funny. We talk about the absolute lack of wide receivers last year, especially after Mooney got hurt, that it was just an abysmal crop of wide receivers. And it is on paper right now, it's almost like an embarrassment of riches because you've got DJ Moore, you've got Chase Claypool, who I'm hearing good things about from the team and from Justin Fields. Darnell Mooney, we already know what he can do. And especially when the pressure isn't on of him to be the number one guy. The draft pick Scott looks really good. We saw, you know, it was a disaster early on, but those last few weeks with Velus Jones, we start to see some good things. So we're like, huh. If everybody stays healthy, we've got a pretty darn good wide receiver core.
Yeah, the bottom is going to be interesting with this wide receiver core. You know, who is going to make it? Is Velus Jones going to make it? Is Dante Pettis going to be part of the equation? Is Equanimeous St. Brown going to be your final receiver, you know, used as more of a blocker downfield? That's going to be really interesting that we're going to see play out in preseason. We know who our top three are when healthy. It's going to be filling out the rest of those. And, you know, if Scott's looking really good, I think that's a pretty safe bet. But, you know, there's still some spots towards the bottom of your wide receiver core that are going to be, you know, there's going to be a competition, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't expect both Mooney and Claypool to be back next year. So you are grooming some of these young players to fill those roles. And I'm just saying that we drafted a guy that's very, very similar to Darnell Mooney. We did not draft anybody that's very, very similar to Chase Claypool.
No, you're right. You're right. I mean, that is very true.
I mean, it's going to come down to, I think they'll extend one of those two, but it's going to come down to who's playing, you know, but you're putting yourself in a position of, I mean, if either both of those guys fail, you know, injuries or just don't produce, you know, you've drafted in the last 2 years, two guys that, you know, are lightning fast, and you, you know, develop those with DJ Moore from remaining your number one guy. But I have a feeling they'll extend one of those two wide receivers.
Yeah, I think so too. And there's going to be, I think, a lot that the Bears are going to evaluate over this season, you know, more than just numbers, you know, how well are they gelling with the offense? And, you know, I have every confidence that Mooney's going to, you know, obviously health, I think, is a big factor here because Mooney has had, you know, some injuries. We saw it last year. So I think that's important too. So there's going to be a lot that goes into the evaluation this year. And like you said, I think at least one will be extended. I mean, the nice thing is we're not worried about cap space still.
No,
the
no.
flexibility that we have.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have a ton. I think we're going to be projected at this point, having the second most cap space next year. Like we're still in really good shape. And there is room to move on from players. Like, you know, starting next year is, you know, you can move on from Whitey Coathair. You can move on from Eddie Jackson. You know, you've got room to maneuver with some of these bigger, you know, the last remaining bigger contracts you have. You could start to move on from those.
Right, exactly.
You don't need to. I'm just saying is you have maneuvers next year.
So much flexibility.
Mm-hmm. So this, I'm starting to like how things are gelling. The cornerback situation is looking very good. The interior defensive line, I'm getting more excited about. The safety situation is pretty good. You love your starters. Got to learn more about your depth. The linebackers, very happy with the linebackers.
And yep, most improved aspect of the team.
Yeah, and you're hearing great things about their performance so far in training or in a mini camp.
Yeah, I'm excited for TJ Edwards. I really am. You know, if there's a guy that you're going to rely on making his tackles and doing the basic things, I think he's one of your safest bets on that team.
Yeah, so I'm getting excited about this team. I'm not saying they're Super Bowl bound. I'm just saying this is a wide open division.
Well, I think what's nice about this year is that you get a potential to actually look for growth because it's not built to be a contender yet, but at least you're not just filling it with garbage, you know, like you were last year. You're not stripping right. something down to the studs. You're not replacing that with garbage to be garbage. You know, you're going out there and you're saying, okay, we've got this foundation. Now we're going to start building pieces around it. We have a linebacking core now. We've made our wide receiver core better by adding DJ Moore. We've gone ahead and helped draft some line protection for Justin Fields. We have a new running back dynamic now that we have, you know, brought in, blanking on the name.
Roschon Johnson and
Roschon Johnson,
Deontay Foreman,
and Deontay Foreman, and you know Travis Homer is a blocker along with Khalil Herbert. So you feel pretty good about that. And you know, you like your secondary. I like our secondary. I think it's a solid secondary. So again,
I think the cornerback situation is pretty darn good. Is
yeah,
you know, Jalon Johnson has been your best cornerback. Stevenson is apparently playing really well and Gordon is you can now focus on being a slot guy, and some of the young players that you had they were forced to step up last year because of injuries, some of them played pretty well, and you're like, now they're your primary backups. That's you're starting to feel confident about the secondary. And I know they've invested a lot into it draft pick wise. I mean, you have 3 second round picks, as starters, but, you know, I'm happy with that. So you're starting to see that gel. You know, I think the big thing with the Bears defense is, can they stop the run? If they can stop the run, even without a pass rush, I think they'll be okay.
Agreed.
Because I think, you know, without the pass rush, where they're going to be vulnerable is the deep passes. And I think their secondary is good enough to not take that away, but to at least slow that down. I think the underneath stuff, I think your linebackers are fast enough to be able to cover underneath.
See, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, you're not going to be the best run stopping defense by any means in the NFL, but if you can hold your own, that's going to make a significant difference if your secondary plays well.
Yeah, you just can't have a team running all over you.
Right, exactly. I mean, you can't have a team controlling the clock against you. You can't have a team that's able to just control possessions and time. I mean, you can't win a Super Bowl without being able to stop the run. Even though it's a passer's game and the quarterback, blah, 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 stopping the run is imperative. And, you know, if you look at last year, if you had a decent run-stopping defense, you probably squeak out a few more wins. Right?
Absolutely.
And you know what? We weren't looking to win last year, so it didn't really matter last year. But now, when you're trying to be more competitive than you were, you know, you're going to need to stop the run. And obviously, improving your linebackers can help, but, you know, what are you going to do at the very front? You know, how effective are you going to be at doing that? And I think if this defense is healthy, I think it's an okay defense. I think that you're still not going to be very good at stopping the run. You might be meh at it, but you're not going to be great at it. And you're not going to, you know, right now, the way it's built, you're not going to get to the quarterback. If you drastically improved one of those two areas, then I think it's a different conversation. But, you know, unless in prime Khalil Mack is coming through that door, or, you know, suddenly you're going to have a bunch of run stoppers come in, you know, it might improve a little bit with a few moves, but it's not going to become you're not going to get to an elite level with your run stopping or your rush to the quarterback.
Right. And I think if you could add a 9 to 10 sack defensive end to this defense, I think they're actually a pretty decent defense.
That's
the differentiator, I think, is. And it's also going to hinge on these young defensive tackles, how quickly they progress. If they progress, you know, like we hope, then yeah, it's going to propel us up the board quicker. But if it takes them a little while to, you know, figure out the league, and without those edge rushing help, yeah, this could be a little rough.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that just steering away quickly from those two aspects of the game, I think there is something very, very important to how this defense is going to play. And those are going to be those are going to lie somewhat on Ryan Poles' first two ever draft picks. I mean, Brisker, I think, still has the highest ceiling of any defender on this team. I don't know what you think, but that's my opinion.
I would. Yes. Yes and no. Yes, with an asterisk, just because the safety position is not as valuable as maybe a defensive lineman. But yes. My other one would be Jervon Dexter. Is I think there's a ton of opportunity for him to be good. But I'm not going to disagree by saying Brisker.
Yeah.
High expectations, came in, played, met and exceeded those expectations, still has room to grow and into being a really special player.
Right. And, you know, I don't want to necessarily compare the value of a safety to a defensive lineman or a linebacker or whatnot. But I, you know, what I'm kind of saying here is, in terms of at their position and how much value they provide themselves at their respective position. Like, for example, you know, you could compare it to say, hey, the player on the highest ceiling of our baseball team is our left fielder because he can hit really, really well. And a left fielder might not be necessarily as valuable as a first baseman or a number one starting pitcher, but if the most talent potential is there, that's kind of where I'm getting at.
Yeah, I would agree then that Brisker probably, probably at the tops.
What I love most about Jaquan Brisker is just how quick he gets to the ball.
Yes.
I think his skills at that are very impressive.
Yeah, the skills to be able to be where the ball is and make a play on it.
Right.
A lot of guys are, especially playing a similar position, they play it as make a lot of big hits.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with that, but is Jaquan Brisker adds the ability to play the ball. And that adds like an extra dimension to what he does.
Right. And remember, this ain't saying much, but he led the team in sacks last year. Your safety. That's how bad that pass rush was.
I mean, all I'm going to say is it's an odd year. Is maybe we bring back Robert Quinn.
Wouldn't that be something?
How funny would that be if we traded him for a fourth round pick? And he didn't do anything for the Eagles, and we brought him back, and he was a 20-sack guy.
You know, it's funny because you watched the playoffs last year, and you watched the Super Bowl. The Eagles made it to the Super Bowl. And I kept saying, oh, yeah, Robert Quinn was acquired by the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you didn't actively think about it.
Oh yeah, we own back to back Eagles fourth round picks, one for Robert Quinn and one for the draft day trade.
Woo!
Yay!
Hey, it's better than nothing,
picks.
Right?
It is better than nothing. I mean, the Bears are proven that they can find talent in those fourth rounds.
Yeah, I mean it's the NFL. Every draft pick in the NFL is valuable.
Yeah, and you know the more bites you get at the apple, the more likely you are to find a player that can play.
Just a big giant metaphorical apple.
But is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, not today, but I do feel like on one of our coming shows, we do have to circle around to the Bulls again, because there's some stuff and some words going on that I think is worthy of discussion. I also very important that not next week, but the week after, we're going to be doing a show where Connor Bedard is officially a Blackhawk. It's pretty exciting,
right? Yeah. It's in 2 weeks, we have the Connor Bedard show. And you're right, Bulls. There's, you know, rumors about a Zach LaVine trade. And I thought about bringing it up today, but I was just like, everything is just so nebulous. Like there's nothing concrete to establish, you know, it might just be chatter. I mean, I'm sure AK is listening to offers on Zach LaVine, but it's got to make sense for the Bulls. You know, I've seen a ton of people posting, oh, this trade, could this get this done for the Bulls? And you're like, this trade doesn't make sense for the Bulls, or it doesn't make sense for the other team, or it doesn't make sense for either team, and neither team would ever consider that.
Right.
It's so, like, you know, at this point, I there's no doubt in my mind that Zach LaVine could be traded for the right trade, but it's not a situation where the Bulls have to trade him or maybe necessarily want to trade him. But if that right deal comes about, you got to do what's best for the organization. And right now it's just sort of, at least as far as we know publicly, this is all just, you know, speculation and free draft chatter.
Yeah. We can go into it in more detail another time, but yeah, it's there's just a lot going on right now.
I don't know if you followed the drama with Zion Williamson.
Oh yeah.
I saw somebody made an animation where Michael Jordan is standing there. And he's like, Zion, we're considering bringing you to Charlotte. Do you think you could play a whole season? And then you just hear, and Zion is Jabba the Hutt.
Oh my God.
And he's like, well, no, I'm not expecting you to play the whole season. Just play well enough to get the fans excited. And then he goes, yes, we do have a lot of beautiful women. And I'm sure some of them let you spit in their mouth. And
oh,
it's like, oh my God.
Hey, MJ is going to be selling, by the way. You see that?
Yes, for a lot of money.
Hey, MJ, I bet you can't sell your team. And I took that personally. I bet you can't sell for this. And I took that personally. I bet you can't sell it for even this. And I took that personally.
I wonder what he's going to do with himself.
I got plenty of ventures, I guess.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears, 31... the -7.
The Bears.
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down.